Hello, this is Kendra Brodine, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com. And today I am so pleased to bring you a conversation with Carol Seal Kleiman. Carol is a shareholder at the firm of Schatz, Schwartz, and Fenton in Springfield and Northampton, Massachusetts. And she concentrates her practice in the areas of elder law, estate planning, special needs planning, estate settlement, guardianships, and trust and estates litigation. Carol has been listed in the Best Lawyers in America since 2006 and in Massachusetts Super Lawyers since 2005. She's a contributing author of the three-volume treatise, Estate Planning for the Aged and Incapacitated Client in Massachusetts, which was published in 1998, and that is considered one of the leading publications in the field. She is also an editorial board member of the NALA Journal, the law review published nationally by the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. She has lectured before numerous professional and civic organizations, taught elder law at Western New England College Law School in the LLM program, and is president of the Hampden County Estate Planning Council. Prior to entering law school, Carol worked for 20 years as a reporter, copy editor, and freelance journalist for such publications as the Providence Journal, the Berkshire Eagle, Palm Beach Post, Miami Herald, New York Times, Newsweek, Esquire, and Mademoiselle. Carol, I'm just delighted to welcome you to the call today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you here. Well, let's just jump right into the questions that I'm hoping that along the way we'll get to hear a little bit more about your background, because it sounds like you had a completely separate professional identity for the first chunk of your career and then moved into the practice of law, and I hope we get to hear a little bit more about that transition for you.
Okay.
Carol, Go right ahead.
I was going to say it was a real natural transition for me. But the first 20 years of my career were wonderful, and I wouldn't trade them for the world. It was very different, but helps me very much in my profession, my new profession.
I think sometimes as we segue from one sort of career or profession or field to another, there's so much we can draw from our initial field to bring into the practice of law in strange and interesting ways that we might not even that aren't obvious to the outside person.
True.
Carol, well, with that, and maybe it'll come up as well as we're talking through the first question, I'd like to invite you to think back on your life professionally and personally, and I'm wondering if, as you think about that, do you feel like you were always rather good at balancing your work and your life, or as a student, your education and the rest of your life? Or was there a pivotal point or a critical time where things just came to a crux and you said, I've got to do something differently and I've got to make this work and be more balanced?
Oh, absolutely. I was not. When I first started my career as a journalist, I was not good at balancing work and life at all. I mean, my work was my life, and I just ate, slept, breathed. Writing was just everything. Getting the story was just everything. Getting the story first, and, you know, if that meant having to, you know, stay up 3 days in a row and not sleep, I would do that. And I remember when I was working in Florida, one of my first jobs was a police reporter, and the paper I worked for made me carry a beeper. So I wasn't married at the time, and I could never be on a date without being beeped and having to leave to go to some murder scene or whatever, because it was, you know, the early 1980s, and there was probably at least one murder a day in Palm Beach County, if not more. And, you know, so I had really no private life whatsoever, and really didn't for a long time. I mean, I got married in 84, and my husband was also a workaholic, and, you know, we just worked all the time. And I'm sure that other women have said this. It really didn't strike home for me until I had a baby. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the pivotal point when I realized that I had to do something. And I was still in journalism at the time. And I remember I came back from maternity leave with this had this infant in daycare, and my editor said to me, my first day back after maternity leave, he says to me, well, he goes, I want you to know that here are your priorities. Your family comes first, and then your job. And I'm like, well, thank you very much. I'm aware of my priorities. I'm so glad you feel the same way that I do. And the first 3 months that I was, the first month and a half that I was back on the job, my baby had 3 ear infections and the chicken pox.
Oh, my
God. And I missed a total in my first, maybe that was an exaggeration. It was probably my first 2 months back at work. And I missed exactly 3 days because between my husband, my parents came in from out of town, and I was just, you know, freaking out because I thought, oh, my God, I can't be away. I was an editor, city editor at the time, and I couldn't possibly be away from the office that much. I'd just been on maternity leave. And he called me into his office and just started reading at the end of this period when we finally, you know, things finally settled down. He called me in his office and he said, you know, you've been missing a lot of work lately and I want you to know, you know, and all of a sudden the whole, gee, your family comes first, went out the window. And that was a real eye-opener for me because I said, you know, I don't really have family backup. My parents were out of town. We were living in an area where we didn't know anybody. We had to rely on professionals for help. And, you know, when your baby is sick, you can't leave them out on the street. Most daycares won't take them.
That's right.
So it's like, whoa, I got to figure out something different here. Fortunately, it was a crappy economy, and I got laid off, and that gave me time to sort of reassess my career and where I was and what I wanted. That was a pivotal point for me. That was kind of the wake-up moment that I, like, whoa, I got to do something because if not, I'm going to be insane.
Yeah. Carol, I'm wondering, was that when you say you reevaluated your career at that point, was that when you decided to make the transition into law, or was that a separate time?
Well, actually, it was around the same time. I mean, I actually got called back to, I was one of the few times when I've gotten laid off where they actually called me back to work. My job changed slightly from city editor to more of a features editor job, which was great because I could do it with one hand tied behind my back and you could do the pages in advance. And, you weren't running around late at night and having, you know, breaking news and all of this. So that actually helped. And then I got laid off again. So around the same time as I'm having these big life changes with the new baby and whatever, it was also a shakeout period for me in the newspaper business, or, you know, journalism in general, because I was doing some freelance magazine work too at the time. And I didn't like the stories that I was being assigned, or, you know, it was going very much in sort of the celebrity news genre, which was not, you know, I came of age in the 70s. I mean, I was a crusader. I didn't want to write about, you know, Britney Spears or whoever the celebrity was at the time. And I could see, I was settled. I loved this area. We moved from Florida to Western Massachusetts. I absolutely love it here. Just could see myself staying here forever and didn't want to have to move for a journalism job. My husband was settled. And I could see that there was a shakeout in the journalism business. I'm thinking, you know, I got a few more years to work here, like about 30, and 25, 30 years to work, and I don't know if this field is going to be around for that long. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be pretty prescient because a lot of my friends who are still in the business now, who are my age, are, you know, being pressured to leave, take buyouts, early retirement, et cetera, and so forth. So I knew that financially, you know, for our family finances, I had to do something different. And I started looking around to see what I could do. And I thought, well, okay, probably medical school is too late for me now. I'm, you know, going to be 40, and law just seemed natural. So I made this plan. I like to make plans, you know. So I make plans. So my plan was I was going to take the LSATs, and if I did well in the LSATs, okay, fine. But if I didn't do well in the LSATs, my plan B was I would go to school and get an accountant's degree, because I wanted to do something where I could hang out my own shingle and not have to work for somebody else, you know, be a wage slave or whatever. So it was going to be first law, then accounting, and if accounting didn't work, I was going to make cheesecakes. And I had, like, the name for the business and everything. I was going to call it Cheese Louise, and I was going to try to cater for the Smith College and Amherst College faculty parties or whatever. So I had this whole plan. Anyway, it ended up I did okay at the LSATs, and Western New England College, which is right in Springfield, had a night school, and I thought, okay, perfect. I can work and go to law school at the same time. So I worked, went to law school, and had a two-year-old, managed to make it work, but... That was hard.
I can only imagine. I remember when I was in law school, I saw working folks sort of in the situation you encountered with a child at home, and they were working and they were trying to do law school. And I was newly married and not pregnant until the end of law school, and I just thought, oh my gosh, I didn't know how they did it, and they did it with such apparent grace. I'm sure on the backside they were frantic, but they just seemed to take it all in stride, and I just marveled at them.
I think, you know what I think it is? It was funny, in a bizarre way, law school was kind of, you know, my kind of Calgon take me away moment.
Oh.
You know, that was the time. That was like my time for myself that I didn't have to feel guilty about. Like if I were home reading a magazine, eating bonbons, I would feel guilty. But because I'm in law school.
Yeah. There's no bonbons in law school.
No, it's me time. Right. But it was me time.
Right.
It was me time.
That is one way to get through it, because not everybody
exactly.
looks at it that way. Very few, I would say.
Exactly. But I think maybe that's the difference with going to law school when you're 40 mm-hmm. and going to law school when you're 20 or 21 or whatever, because, you know, I'd already done a lot of really fun, crazy things with my life and in my career and, you know, traveled and everything, and you know, this was something sort of new, different, and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I never really paid attention that well in college, you know. It was just sort of something to go through. So the idea of going to school and sitting there and learning and really wanting to absorb and being in class with lots of other smart people,
mm-hmm.
that was really fun.
Well, good. I think that coming back into things like that gives you so much more perspective. When you bring your life experience in, there was such a groundedness to folks who were that second career or older or had families when they came back in, and a desire. It wasn't like the hoop to jump through, as you said, sort of was undergrad for you. So many folks who were coming straight from undergrad into law school, it did just feel like that next hoop, and they were very driven and very intense, but they didn't enjoy it. It was just a hard hoop to jump through, where people who were coming back, it really felt like they wanted to be there. They had made a decision and really accepted some challenges to be there, you know, juggling other things like family, and they seemed to just, you could see it. It was almost palpable that they really were engaged and enjoying it.
Well, I think it was, you know, the idea, sort of law or a lawyer was, you know, kind of a means to an end. Whereas for the younger folks, I think that it was a lot of them were so driven. They were brilliant and wonderful and energetic, but their image was so tied into, like, the idea of lawyer, you know, of being a lawyer. It was like the status of it, in a way. And a lot of the older people, and because I went to school at night, there were mostly people like me in school, and it was great because there were doctors, there were hospital administrators, there were insurance people. I mean, the class was great because everybody was most of the people were very accomplished in their field. Were just, you know, either going to school law because they wanted to enhance their, you know, CV or whatever, you know, gain some new knowledge or change careers, but they had already achieved a certain amount in their life, and so they weren't tied in with the status of lawyers so much as the learning of it, of the, you know, like, wow, everybody should know this kind of knowledge, this information should be packaged, and every high school kid should know it before they get out of school, because this is life, you know. So I think there's that difference, that people were more wrapped up just enjoying the gaining this knowledge rather than the whole status of law. And I felt like my first career in journalism, I was like that. I really could identify because that's the way I was, you know. Your image was so keyed into, like, were you working for a big, you know, national publication, and, you know, did you get your name on your article on the front page, and, you know, your status was so wrapped up in, you know, what institution you worked for and not yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when at one point I quit my job in journalism and I freelanced when I was living in Florida. And that was great for me because it was the first time I didn't have a label. You know, I was just me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was a real learning experience. So I really understand that. I understand where younger folks are coming from. It just wasn't me at that point in my life, you know.
Right.
And so I think that that's where my original career probably helped in the work-life balance, because I learned a lot from that and what to do and what not to do.
Yeah,
and about myself.
You'd been through some of those experiences that taught
right.
you about work-life balance already.
You're working for somebody else.
Yes.
Your identity is key, is tied into, like, working for somebody else and not, like, wait a minute, I'm good at what I do, and
mm-hmm.
people should be, you know, kind of coming to me and recognizing me for that, not like the label that I have, you know, reporter for, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
The title itself, right.
Exactly.
The qualities and what you bring to whatever work you're doing versus just the name or the byline or those sorts of things that's wrapped
right.
up in who you work for.
Right.
So it sounds like, Carol, then, that you learned a lot in that first leg of your professional journey.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I can only imagine. And certainly with the work-life balance, be it, you know, working hard as a journalist, and then translating some of those skills that you learned, and maybe you learned what not to do and you learned what to do, that you were able to translate into your law practice as well.
Exactly. I mean, the first thing what I did was I right away knew that at this point in my life, and this might not be valuable to like a younger person, but maybe it is. At the point in my life when I was getting out of law school, I knew I was going to be 44 years old, and there were certain things that I was not going to do. I didn't want to work for a huge, white shoe law firm in Boston, you know, where I'd have to work 150 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
make gobs of money, but, you know, never see my family. I knew I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do litigation, even though it's sort of a natural progression from journalism in that you're doing a lot of writing, you're thinking on your feet, et cetera, and so forth. I didn't want to do litigation because I knew that I couldn't control my schedule. Lo and behold, I am doing some litigation now, but it's not a major part of my practice, at least not yet. But I didn't want to do litigation. I thought that I was originally thought I would be doing appellate work because of the writing. But someone had suggested estate planning, which seemed kind of boring to me. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I'd want to do that. But I clerked at this firm. I worked at the Attorney General's office, and that really made me realize I didn't want to do litigation. And then I got a law clerk job at Chat Schwartz and Fenton. And I started out doing litigation, but then got tapped to work in the elder law department, which is kind of a little subset of this estate planning. And, you know, helping people with doing Medicaid applications and planning for long-term care costs and helping, you know, people with disabled family members plan for their care and future life and whatever. And I really, really enjoyed it. I just felt like it was so, it was just helping people, you know. They'd come in your office, they'd be all scared and mm-hmm. nervous and thinking that they were going to have to spend every last dime that they had on, because they got sick, and, you know, realizing that I could help them and show them that that didn't have to happen, that there were things they could do to help leverage their dollars and not go into you know, go to the poorhouse. And I mean, people were so grateful. I felt like, and I felt like such a hero. It was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I just fell in love with the practice. So that was how I started. And the side bonus to it was that I could have a life too doing that practice. Because, you know, you don't, there are certain emergencies, you know, sometimes you get, you know, with estate planning or whatever, you get called to people's bedsides or you get the call from the client's family that the client's dying and they want to make changes in their will or you know, et cetera and so forth. There are emergencies, but they're kind of few and far between, and you can plan your life. The other thing is that I realized was that I love this firm. The firm that I'm in, Chet Schwartz and Fenton, I can't believe I've worked here since I was a law clerk in 1993. I've never worked any place this long. I mean, never. But I love this firm because the lawyers here are really, really smart and really dedicated, but they also are family people. And, you know, the hardest charging attorney here, the hardest charging partner, I mean, I have one partner who, I mean, he's, you know, 67 years old, and he's never, ever going to not practice law, and he practices at a fever pitch pace, probably the same as he did when he was, you know, just starting out. But in the middle of the day, if his kid was, you know, in a school play or was in a, whatever, he would leave whatever he was doing and go to his kid's event. And that's all the attorneys here have that. It's kind of like the work is going to be here. Yes, we want you to bill out. You know, you got to have those billable hours. We want you to do good work. We want you to be dedicated to your job. But you know what? Make time for your family because the work's going to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really flexible in that sense, and it is a family. It is a family firm. We don't have the perks that a lot of the other law firms have. You know, we don't have the country club memberships that the firm pays for, and the cars that the firm leases, et cetera. You know, we've made a decision. We don't want to do that. We'd rather have life. You know, so I just lucked out that I ended up at a place that happened to be perfect for me at that time of life. If I were 25 and getting out of law school, you know what? I probably would be doing something like I did in journalism, mm-hmm. only for maybe the SEC or some government, you know, and just be crazy. but at this point in my life, this worked great. Worked out great.
I think there are other
and I am doing trade-offs. Some litigation, so it's not perfect because the litigation part of the practice still is, you know, the crazy part of the practice. But I try to limit it so that it doesn't impinge too much.
Mm-hmm. I think, like you said, there are those trade-offs where maybe you don't make quite as much money as someone at a huge
mm-hmm.
law firm or have the country club membership, but you have more of the lifestyle. I mean, I don't
mm-hmm.
know.
Exactly.
We always call those lifestyle firms where, yes, you're making 10 or 20 or more $1,000 less, but you have your life back and you
yeah.
can sort of create your work around it. And it means
right.
so much because really that extra money doesn't change things as much as having a few extra hours or the flexibility to go see that play. Those sorts of, and that the firm gets it. That's just so golden.
That's right. I mean, we make good money here.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we're not hurting by any means.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's like you'd think, well, okay, so if I bring in another 20 or 30 or 50,000, but is that really going to change my lifestyle? No. So why, you know, what's the trade-off for that? I mean, it's just not, that's not me. Now, other people in the firm probably think differently. You know, our partnership share, whatever, is reflected in that, and that's fine. You know, I made a conscious decision, and none of my peers are saying to me, well, you know, that conscious decision is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's, no, that's what, you know, you can't have it all. You know, you can't expect to have people pay you for work you're not doing.
Right.
And I don't expect that. So
no.
once you make that, you know, once you have that expectation that, okay, I'm not or I guess maybe lack of expectation,
mm-hmm.
okay, what I earn, what I bring in, that controls how much I make. I'm not looking for anybody to pay me any more than what I'm, you know, what I'm worth. Mm-hmm. Then that's freedom. So you can't have it all. I guess that's the message.
Right. Well, you're right. You're not going to work at the big law firm and make the biggest dollar out there and have all the perks and have six kids at home and a happy husband and a perfect figure,
right,
and
exactly,
everything else.
Exactly.
There are.
I guess that's the other thing too. I should give him credit. He's great, and he, you know, we're definitely partners. And you know, I hear people, you know, sort of other women, you know, kind of whine and complain that their husbands don't do anything. Well, it's like, you know what? Put your foot down. I mean, are you a lawyer? It's like, put your foot down.
Like, right.
Why do you stand for that? It's like,
I just don't get it.
It's like, you know, you're really assertive on the job and you're out there plugging and arguing and advocating for your client, but at home,
you need to be an advocate for yourself sometimes.
Exactly, exactly.
Carol, I'm wondering, and maybe you've sort of alluded to it, but if you had to look back and name one challenge, one big challenge that you faced, or one struggle, what would you say that, if there was an overarching thing that you came up against as you were trying to balance your work and your life, what would you say that challenge was?
I think when I first started here as an associate, and, you know, my plan was from the beginning that I wanted to be a partner, because I wanted the autonomy. And as I said, I my whole idea for getting a law degree to begin with was as a way to be working for myself. And, you know, I knew that to be a commodity, I had to be a partner and had to have my own practice. We're in this firm, we're really all entrepreneurs. We have to have our own practices. We have to have our own book of business. So my first few years of as an associate, you know, I had wonderful mentors here, and they helped me a lot. But the message is, okay, that's all well and good. We're going to give you work, but you have to go get your own work. So trying to build a practice and have a life was really difficult, because building a practice, I mean, for a woman, I think, in a smaller city, smaller area, with no family big ties to the community. I live in a tiny town, so that's not really going to help me very much, my community contacts. Trying to build a practice and have a life was difficult, because it meant a lot of nights speaking, you know, what's the expression, you know, speaking at the opening of an envelope. I mean, you know, wherever two or three people were gathered, I would be there to speak. Doing a lot of writing, joining organizations, and, you know, that they all met either late at night or early in the morning. So that's, you know, before and after work. That was really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then just coming off law school, where I felt like I had so much time away from my family, you know, kind of feeling guilty about that. That was very much of a challenge to me. But as I said, I had really fantastic support at home, and I tried to always keep my weekends free. I always Friday night was family night, so I always tried to keep Friday night and my weekends free, and I was pretty good at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times, especially now where people are coming in out of town, and, you know, they'd call and say, well, I'm in town visiting my mother, you know, and I was wondering if you could meet me on Saturday. Well, it's like, well, how long have you been here? You know, and you're calling me like I'm leaving on Tuesday. Well, I can see you Monday, you know. You have to be really, really, I had to be really, really disciplined in my first few years of practice, but that was how I dealt with that. You know, maybe I lost clients because of it, but I just, you know, wouldn't take speaking engagements on the weekends, and I really, really wouldn't take a client on the weekend unless it was like, you know, somebody was dying. It was an absolute emergency.
Do you think that was
a challenge?
If you were then to identify, Carol, your biggest lesson, sort of on the flip side of that challenge, would you say that strong boundaries, having strong boundaries would be that lesson, or would it be something else that you would consider to be more of an overarching way of doing things or philosophy or lesson that you learned as you were trying to balance your work and your life?
Well, I definitely think strong boundaries. Discipline is essential. You just have to be disciplined. And, you know, because when you just open that little thing just a little bit, you open the window just a little bit, you know, people start jumping in. So you have to be very disciplined and very clear about what you're willing to do and what you're willing to not do, and then to be and then to live with the consequences of that, which could mean that you're going to have fewer clients. Now, I have to say that at this point in my life, you know, my son has grown, and you know, it's me and my husband at home, and I'm much more flexible. You know, but at that point in my life, when my family was young, et cetera, you know, and I think that's true for women, you know, we go through different phases of our lives, you know, and there are different, you know, you have to decide at each phase, you have to adapt, and you have to decide at each phase of your life, you know, how you're going to organize your life. So now I might be a little bit less, you know, doctrinaire about it. But back then I was very doctrinaire. And I'm still disciplined. I also believe that you have to be organized. And I don't know if others have had the same, if you've heard this from other people, but I think that a lot of the craziness in our profession is self-inflicted because people are not organized. I mean, right now I'm going away on vacation tomorrow, and I'm going away for, you know, several weeks, and you know, I've got some last-minute things to do, but I've planned this vacation, you know, far enough in advance so that clients who don't have emergencies, you know, that I'm doing estate planning for, maybe some, you know, some other, maybe even litigation clients, you know, I've told them, like, for several months now, I'm going away, you know, the end of May, I'm going to be back, probably the, you know, last week of June, third week of June, so let's try to get things done ahead of time, you know, and let's try not to plan for things to happen during that period when I'm away. So probably 95% of the craziness doesn't happen. You know, the fake emergencies are not going to happen because we've dealt with them ahead of time. The second thing is that I have fantastic partners. Two of my partners here, in the estate planning department, we back each other up. It's how we are able to do what we do so well. And it makes for a wonderful practice, too, because we're constantly, you know, talking to each other about our cases and, you know, running ideas by each other. And it's a very exciting intellectual environment, but it's also a great personal environment because I know when I leave now for 3 weeks, I've got two partners here who, if something comes up, first of all, they know my cases. In fact, we're going out to lunch today, and I'm going to try to fill them in on things that I think might be happening or could potentially be problems. You know, usually it's the stuff you don't think of that comes up. But, but you know, all along we talk about our cases. So probably 9.9 out of 10 times, even if that unexpected thing rears its ugly head while you're out on vacation, at least one of my partners says, oh, yeah, I remember that case. She talked to me. We talked about that, you know. And they get up to speed really fast. And my clients know they're in good hands. I'm not leaving them high and dry. And I think that's essential. You need to have backup. Whether if you're a partner in a firm, you've got to have allies in the firm. And if you're a solo, you've got to have other solos who you back each other up. That's essential. So I think you need to be disciplined, you need to be organized, and you need to have backup. You need to have allies. And I think with those three things, you can have balance in your life.
I think all three of those are so critical. That organization, like you said, sometimes we hate to take responsibility for our own quote-unquote emergencies, but we need to. So many are preventable, and it's the whole lack of preparation that constitutes an emergency that probably didn't have to happen with the right preparation, and I'm guilty of that sometimes, too, and I have to be honest with myself.
Don't you think it's psychological? Yeah. Don't you think it's kind of psychological? Because, like, if you're always in a frenzy, it's almost like, you know, you feel really important. Like,
I do.
Oh, I'm so busy. I'm so important. You know?
That's exactly it. When I work, that's exactly it, Carol. When I talk with some clients and I'll just, you know, they use, I'm so busy. And really when you dig down to it, sometimes I even encourage them to let the word busy release it from their languaging, because it's, in a way it is. It's just saying, you know, I'm important. When somebody says to you, how are you? And you say, oh, I'm so busy. Sometimes we are trying to say, oh, I'm important, and we confuse busyness with importance, and it does go back to something that maybe we're looking for something else in our life and letting the busyness or the feeling of busyness create that when, you know, something else
exactly.
would better fill that hole.
Right. I mean, everybody wants to think they're really essential, like,
yeah,
especially
sure.
to your own clients, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is my client. I have really, you know, massaged and babied and taken care of this person, and they look to me as their, you know, for their advice and counsel and whatever. And the thought that you could go out of town and somebody else could take them on and not only give them advice, but maybe give them better advice than you.
Yeah.
Right. Or different
exactly.
advice that's just as good. It's like, what a scary thought.
It know? Is. And know that we're actually replaceable. Oh, terrifying.
Yeah.
Carol, I suddenly just looked at the clock and I'm mindful of time where I hadn't been, because I'd been just enjoying our conversation so much. But I do know that, like you said, you have a vacation to plan for, and
yes,
I want to respect your time. But I am grateful for what you've shared and for you being here today on the eve of a, I'm sure, well-deserved and well-planned vacation. So before I let you go, I'm wondering if you could share a website or some what you're up to, anything you'd like to share with listeners or readers about how to learn more about you and maybe connect with you in the future.
Well, to learn more about me, you could go to our website. Our firm website is sssfpc.com. So it's, if you think of Schatz Schwartz Fenton PC, Professional Corporation, it's those initials, sssfpc.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on actually getting my own website I don't have the address yet, but if you go to our website, I'm on our website. I'm also, if you go to the NAELA.com website, or the MassNAELA, it's MANAELA.org website, you'll learn a lot about elder law and the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, and I'm on that website also, but, you know, or just give me a call.
Great.
At Schatz Schwartz and Fenton in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, that's perfect. Carol, thank you so much. And thanks again for your time and the wisdom
you've
shared and all the experience that folks can learn from and maybe shortcut their path to having balance and success. So thank you very much, Carol.
Oh, this was fun. I didn't realize I would enjoy talking about myself so much. So
we
thank you for that opportunity.
Often. Isn't it nice?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, great. Well, with that, we'll wrap up our conversation. Thanks to Carol, and thanks to everyone who is here today, be it listening or reading these words. I hope you found something in Carol's story that was meaningful to you and that can be a blessing to you as you move forward and create the life and the law practice that you love. So until next time, this is Kendra Brodine of WomenLawyersOnline.com wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thanks again for being here. Bye-bye.